Hi, welcome to Ryan Talks Tax, a podcast to keep you up to date on the latest developments in Canadian tax and government funding. I'm Jim Day. Well, we're back from summer hiatus, and after spending two episodes discussing federal initiatives, most of which were included in last spring's budget, we want to shift gears a little bit for episode three and talk about something that falls under provincial and municipal jurisdiction, and that's property taxes. More specifically, property taxes in Western Canada. Now, I don't know a lot about property tax, but my guests today sure do. We're joined today by three experts from Ryan's Canadian property tax practice. We've got Travis Horn, a director out in Saskatoon. Hi, Travis.
How's it going?
It's going well, thanks. We've also got Michelle Pink, a principal and a regional leader. She's based in our Calgary office.
Hey, Jim. Hi. How are you today?
Good, Michelle. Thanks. And all the way out in the West Coast, we've got Paul Sullivan, another principal and regional leader. And Paul, I think you work out of our Vancouver office.
Yep, that's right. Good morning to you, Jim.
All right, my thanks to all of you for joining today's podcast. Now, when I think about property taxes, I always think, you know, I guess about my house. And once a year, a bill shows up. There's an assessment value there. I usually don't agree with that value, but there's a value there. And there's two or three different levies. I think it's, you know, where I am at, I think it's city, regional, and education levy. And they multiply those levies by the value, and there's an amount, and I pay it. But of course, you know, so it seems straightforward to me, but what I'm learning is it's not that straightforward, is it? Especially for commercial entities. So Travis, maybe we'll start with you just because you're closest to me geographically. But I understand in Saskatchewan, you know, they have a different appraisal process, or at least it's a little bit different than the rest of the country. Can you maybe explain about that?
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. Thank you. And thanks for having me on the podcast. Saskatchewan is the last Canadian province to move to a market value system for property assessments, which in turn relates to the distribution of taxes. Saskatchewan went to entirely market value in just 2009. And I've been working in Saskatchewan since then. Prior to that, I was in Edmonton for a number of years. But the thing that is really interesting about Saskatchewan, at least to me, is that it has a requirement that is unique worldwide. And I volunteer with the IAAO on a number of task forces and committees. And everybody that I've spoken to, the circumstances and how the assessment works in Saskatchewan doesn't exist anywhere else. And what that is that single property appraisals or single property appraisal techniques are not allowed at all. So if you look at, for example, the BC legislation, it's actual value. And that means market value. If you look at Alberta, it means market value. And in the Act, it requires mass appraisal to be used to develop it. In Saskatchewan, it requires mass appraisal. But what makes it unique is that there is actually a prohibition on single property appraisal techniques. And what that means is the assessor can't find something about a property that is, you know, unique or special, and then use a single property appraisal technique to get an accurate estimate of the market value for that property. And that causes a lot of problems in terms of the properties that somebody may own that are, you know, on the edge of a bell curve, you know, something that is really old or really new or really big or really small. Or, you know, one of the tribunal members asked me, you know, in a small town, if there's one house that's next to the dump, how does the assessment account for that? And at that time, there didn't seem to be an answer. So, you know, when this system really launched in 2009, market value, mass appraisal only, there was a lot of research that was done as to what is a quote unquote single property appraisal technique. And there is really no definition that was able to be found out there. Like there's no textbook article authority standard that says this is a single property appraisal technique, probably because legislation like this has never existed before, but also it's kind of, you know, inherent in any, you know, authority that you look at in terms of how to do assessments or valuation in general. So there was a lot of misunderstanding about what that meant. And eventually it did go to the Court of Appeal for Saskatchewan. And everybody was waiting with bated breath as to what the Court of Appeal was going to say and how to interpret what a single property appraisal technique is. And the court actually took an approach that at the time was a little bit disappointing. But as I look back on it, I think there was a lot of wisdom in it, in that the court didn't define what a single property appraisal technique is or is not. What the court did is it said that methods, approaches, or, you know, valuation, things like that, if it's incompatible with mass appraisal, you can't do it. So it's not so much a definition of what is a single property appraisal technique. It's more so a review of, is what is being done compatible with the tenets of mass appraisal? So I think that that guidance has been refined and reinterpreted since then. And it's, you know, something that a lot of clients and people that I speak to have a lot of misunderstandings about. And, you know, I do my best to try and help them understand, you know, what can and can't be done here. And that when something is valued on a mass appraisal system, there's a lot of differences in terms of how you have to look at your own property assessment. Because at the end of the day, although it's a mass system, an individual value has to be set for every property. And every owner really cares about their individual value. So there's a bit of a disconnect between the system and what the result is, because the results are individual values. So I really enjoy speaking with people about that and trying to help them understand, or, you know, learning about it myself in terms of the questions they may ask.
That's really interesting. Do you know, like, what was the original motivation or rationale for trying to take the single property appraisals out of the process? Like, were there concerns about people taking advantage of certain situations, or does this somehow just simplify everything for the province to do it with mass appraisal only?
That's a good question. I can't speak to the legislative intent in terms of why it's only mass appraisal and single property appraisal is prohibited. I can speculate from where I sit, and I think it is somewhat of a carryover from the previous system. And the previous system was a regulated cost approach. And what that means is that the government would publish a big book or a manual with all of the costs and all of the rates and that sort of thing. And then, you know, the assessor would look at your property and they'd say, okay, it's wood frame, so it gets this rate. It's this big, it gets this rate, that sort of thing. And in that system, the primary element, or prime directive actually is described by the Court of Appeal, was equity. So the accuracy of an individual assessment, for all intents and purposes, kind of takes a back seat to doing groups of properties in an equitable manner. Now, that doesn't mean you can't do them all incorrectly, but that's my perception of the carryover to prohibit single property appraisals, is to reinforce the idea of equity, even in a market value system. And in fact, in the Act, it says equity is the dominant controlling factor. Now, when something is equitable, but something is maybe perhaps also wrong, that's where a lot of nuance and a lot of debate comes in. And I know Paul's familiar with, out in BC, the debate about how that works in that system, you know, first with, I believe it was Bromley, and then it was clarified in Bentall. So if you look at those decisions in Saskatchewan, they don't really apply, because the concept of an individual market and how it relates to an equitable value, that part of it never comes into play, because there's never consideration for an individual market value in Saskatchewan, even though the assessments are individual assessments for individual properties.
Now, can that work in favor of the taxpayer, or, you know, in your experience, is it generally something you have to battle?
It's something that kind of works both ways. I mean, to give you an example, when mass appraisal is the only option, you're not so much reviewing, or if you think there's something wrong, challenging in your individual property. What you're doing is you're reviewing and challenging the assessor's model. So you have to understand not only how the model was developed, but how the assessor, you know, specified it. And what specified mean is, you know, how they categorize the data, and then how they apply it to not only your property, but others. So the nuance comes in terms of, did they have or did they collect the right type of data? Did they organize it the right way? After it was organized, did they, you know, code it the right way. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you have an element such as size, well, that's a continuous variable. And what that means is, you know, it can be anything from zero up to infinity. So if the assessor chose to categorize size in blocks or groups, you know, zero to 10,000, 10,000 to 20, that sort of thing, that may not be the best approach based on the circumstances of the data that the assessor was using, because size doesn't exist in those blocks. It doesn't exist with thresholds. It exists on a continuum. So it's things like that really come into play when reviewing an assessment in Saskatchewan and how it's developed and then how it's applied. And getting back to like the specification of how the assessor does the modeling or the AVM automated valuation model, it reminds me of a time where a couple of years ago when I was an assessor, we rolled out a draft of the model to industry experts, owners, appraisers, realtors, property managers. And one of the elements that at the time the analyst had put in the model was, in the rent model we had, or I should say the assessor had at that time, a characteristic for condo. So in the rent model, if you were or were not a condo title, there was an adjustment. And it was a increase in value if it was a condo. So that was rolled out and everybody said, you know, that kind of looks funny and we don't really see why there would be a premium in the rent, not the sales, and that's an important distinction, in the rent for a property being a condo. So afterwards, you know, we took that feedback and, you know, went back to the office and I thought about it a little bit and I said, geez, you know, there was enough data collected. There was, you know, thousands of rents. And the way it was coded was correct. Because when there's something wrong with an AVM or a mass appraisal model, the first step is check the data, make sure it's in there correctly. So after all of that was done, after the data quality was all checked, the thing that occurred to me was, should the condo element be in there in the first place in the rent model? Because the goal of a rent model is to reflect market rents. It reflects the interaction between the landlord and the tenant market. So if a landlord is leasing out something or a tenant is renting something, does the tenant really care if the title is a condo or a non-condo? I mean, they're ultimately renting something that would look very similar if it was a non-condo. So we did some research and, you know, I looked up a number of authorities and couldn't find any basis for when analyzing a rent, whether a single property or mass, that the condo would be a characteristic one ought to consider. Now, granted, that's certainly a consideration undoubtedly in the sales analysis, but not in the rent. So based on that feedback that we got from people in the market that participate in the market, that know the market, because although assessors attempt to reflect the market, they're not operating in it every day. So taking that feedback, taking that advice, relying on those external experts was crucial in that instance. And what the result was is to simply take out that element from the model because it shouldn't have been there in the first place. Notwithstanding, it was statistically reliable and there was enough data. It shouldn't have been there in the first place. So overall, Jim, I've kind of forgot your initial question, but I hope I've answered it.
Well, I think you did. First of all, you confirmed my suspicion. This is far more complicated than I thought. So thank you for that. Very interesting. So how does that compare to the systems in Alberta and British Columbia? Michelle, maybe.
Yeah, so I can speak about Alberta. Sometimes we're kind of referred to as the cowboys out here. So we do use mass appraisal as well. We do not have a centralized system. So I think when Paul starts talking about it, you know, that he has a centralized system, but how it works in Alberta is each municipality is actually puts out their own role. They provide their own valuation system. We are based on mass appraisal. So how Travis was talking about that, you know, put a bunch of numbers in and then a computer spits them out in terms of the individual assessment numbers. Where we do alter a little bit is we are allowed to make market adjustments for site-specific issues on properties. We still do look at equity. So we look at either market value and or equity here in Alberta. We have a little bit more of, I don't know, a value roller coaster, perhaps, certainly in cities like Calgary and some of our municipalities over the last few years. Since we are on a single year cycle, which means we get an assessment every year. And so you get a kick at the can every year to review that assessment. But with that, you know, we can have sharp increases and sharp decreases in our values here in Alberta, because we are on that single year cycle. So that's a nuance as well compared to Travis there, because he's on a multi-year cycle, which means you get, you know, your assessment once, what is it, every 4 years, Travis?
Yeah, the assessments are set every 4 years, but you do have the right to appeal every year within those 4 years. And you know, more often than not, the assessor does change the overall model at some point in those 4 years.
Right. Whereas like in Alberta, that's changing every single year. So that's a nuance as well. And you said something at the beginning there, Jim, it actually kind of like makes my blood boil a bit when people are like, well, I get my tax bill and then I pay it. And so, you know, with commercial properties, specifically in most municipalities in Alberta, by the time you've gotten your tax bill, you actually can't do much with it. You can't actually appeal or review your taxes, but you can appeal and review your assessment. And so in Alberta, most major municipalities are actually going to mail out your assessment earlier on in the year, and that's when you get the value of, you know, the assessable value of your property. And then 3 or 4 months later, after they've set the mill rate and to know what each municipality needs in terms of their budget, then they're going to send you your tax bill. And that's when most people kind of look at their taxes and say, this isn't right. This is what's happened here. But at that point, it's too late, because you can't actually appeal your taxes. You can only appeal your assessment value here in Alberta. So that's a really important thing to understand. So when you get your assessment value in Alberta, we have 60 days to review that value. So once you have that assessment, you have 60 days to understand whether that value is correct, it's fair, it's equitable, it's the same as your neighbor down the street in terms of how your rates are being applied and the information that the assessor has. And if you miss that that deadline, you don't get another kick at the can until next year. So, you know, those are some really important things to be looking at, you know, from the Alberta standpoint as well.
Yeah, that, you know, that's a really good point. I mean, I made it sound like a once a year thing, and clearly, you know, that would be a mistake. It's not a once a year thing. It's an ongoing thing, you know, to make sure that valuation is correct. Paul, what's the situation in BC? Is similar process to Alberta?
Yeah, I mean, the assessments in BC are a little bit different in that it's a market value system. We value properties as at July 1st every year based upon the market circumstances. So it's not a mass appraisal model. It's very specific. It allows the ability to adjust for specific physical or economic differences between properties. So it's a challenging process. But, you know, I think anybody that wants to know a little bit about what's going on in Vancouver and taxation, they really need to look at the backdrop of what's gone on politically in British Columbia. We have the highest housing prices in the country and some of the highest in the world. And 6 years ago, we had a change of government. We went from 16 years being reigned by the Liberals, who were, you know, center right wing, and were deemed to be sort of pro-development and more, I guess, you know, well, right wing. Then 6 years ago, we had a change of government. We went to the NDP. And when the NDP got elected, they went on a platform of reducing the disparity between homeowners and renters. That government said, renter or homeowners won the lottery, and you're going to give a little back. And you're going to give a little back through taxation. And that's called democratic socialism. And that's what we're in British Columbia. And since they've been elected, they've introduced or increased 19 new taxes, and a lot of them applied to real estate. And they said through their demand side measures, they're going to create affordability for people that rent, and they're going to build affordable housing. And this is sort of the backdrop of the situation that we ran into with multiple new taxes being introduced against real estate in British Columbia. Unfortunately, what happened in their application of all these new taxes is they ended up being applied to both commercial property as well as development land, not just, quote, mansions, which is what the media talked about. They talked about the mansions. Well, that's not actually the significant issue here. It's the ICI properties, commercial ones. So just to rattle them off, I mean, in British Columbia, we have this basic animal property tax. It's really complicated here because we have the annual assessment roll. And then we have 9 different classes of property. You know, you can be residential, you can be light industry, heavy industry, recreational, business and other, forestry. All sorts of different uses drive different tax rates. You need to know who you are, what you qualify for. So that's your basic property tax. Then we have these new taxes. We've got additional school tax. We have speculation and vacancy tax. We have empty home tax. We have foreign buyers tax. We have luxury property transfer tax. And now we got the federal government talking about underutilized land tax. And we have our municipalities talking about land value capture tax. So it will make your head spin how many taxes there are.
That's a lot of taxes. There's no question about that.
And what's important, Jim, is, you know, I have clients sit in my office where they're experiencing 1,300% tax increases on their real estate. And it's because they don't know the rules of the game. The government writes legislation, and then there's the ability to organize yourself to avoid a lot of this taxation. And that's where our expertise is. You need to plan 2 to 3 years in advance of your tax year, the uses and classifications of your property such that you don't end up being taxed during your development cycle. So there's a lot of planning that goes into it, and there's a lot of unintended consequences that are coming out of all this new taxation. You got to remember this, every one of these taxes has the piece of legislation goes with it and has given to the taxing jurisdiction to impose across 2 million properties. We're in the early years of all this new tax. There's a ton of new litigation going on, and our industry is certainly not taking it lying down.
Yeah, I mean, I heard the speculation and vacancy tax, its application actually, you know, had an unintended consequence. And I guess British Columbia for a time there had kind of created this air tax. Now, when I saw the headline, I thought, how on earth are they taxing air? Like, are they charging you a tax when you fill up your tires at the service station? I mean, obviously it's not that. Maybe just for listeners, explain what happened there and how you were able to resolve it.
Yeah, well, back in 2014, we were successful in winning a court case, which is the land or the undeveloped potential above a commercial building is assessed. It's part of land value, it's density, but it's unbuilt density, which is actually zoned residential. So back in this court case said, okay, that zoned air ought to be taxed at residential tax rate. It was a fantastic outcome. All of our small businesses throughout commercial nodes saved 30-40% in property tax when the airspace above their stores got a residential tax rate and not a commercial tax rate. Well, then comes along our new government, and they said any unused residential land, which in this case is air above stores, will be subject to additional school tax and speculation tax. So it wiped out all the benefit of the prior case and was deemed to be hugely unfair in the media. And, you know, I took it to the media and said, look at this, because we told the government when they crafted these taxes, this is going to be the negative effect they have on small business. They were aware of it. They said, we don't care. And then they did care when they got splashed on the front page of the paper and all of our, you know, all of our residents in Vancouver, we care about our small businesses. And there was an uproar about it. And for the first time with this government in my 6-year history working with them, they rescinded that tax. And so it's got a remission agreement in place for now. Whether or not they're going to change something as a long-term approach to it, we're not sure at the minute. But, you know, there's a lot of unfairness that gets created when you're trying to create all these new taxes on property.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very unusual scenario. I guess, was that just an attempt to try to force people with development potential to actually, you know, create the housing, you know, say above their restaurant or whatever the case might have been?
Well, what the minister said in the media is these property owners pursuing redevelopment are land speculators, and they ought to pay the tax themselves. So this comes back to the divide that our provincial government has created between the haves and the have-nots. So if you're a property owner or a landlord, you're bad, you should pay taxes and not charge them to your tenants as per a triple net lease. Where the minister was wrong was she didn't realize that there was no rezoning activity going on. Vancouver is an example of a city where land value exceeds the value of the existing use in the majority of our assessments. So land value is greater than the income producing ability of the one-story retail building. There's no rezoning, there's no speculation, there's no big bad developer involved. This is just the market. And they didn't think their new taxes through properly and created these unintended consequences.
I just want to comment on that unintended consequences, because that's something that you know, we see a lot with some of the owners in that failure to tax plan, because they're not looking at their assessments in a whole. And the same thing can happen here in Alberta. Our regulations changed about 3 years ago insofar as how land was actually being assessed and you know, the use of residential rates versus commercial rates. And as Paul mentioned there, you know, the residential rates are much, much lower in, you know, all municipalities than the commercial rates. And so, you know, our governments kind of tidied up the regulations a bit a few years ago. And something that they did was, if there was any commercial use on some of this vacant land, you could be selling parking at $5 a pot for a hockey game. That would be now considered a commercial use. So something that was, you know, previously looked at as residential potential, because that's probably what's going to be built there in the future, was getting 100% commercial taxation. So, you know, we've seen that unintended consequences, as Paul mentioned there, on some of these parcels as well. So it's something to contemplate, you know, in terms of how you're utilizing your land moving forward in the future. I have another client who has a large parcel of land by the airport here in Calgary, and they were looking at, they were still using it as agriculture. They were haying and baling their parcel. And so they were considered agriculture, but they weren't reporting that correctly to the city, and they were being charged as commercial. And that's, you know, an 86% increase on their taxes in doing so. So proper tax planning and understanding, you know, what's available to you, and not just getting that assessment and agreeing with it, getting that second look and really understanding the nuances that are out there is really important in that tax planning. So yeah, that was a really good point, Paul.
I mean, yeah, some of these cases are very, very interesting. Paul, I know there was another case involving the additional school tax out in British Columbia that, again, perhaps some unintended consequences where this tax got levied on the Musqueam Band. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, it's we call it a case of first impressions, because it's new legislation that has been imposed on the assessment roll, and there's no jurisprudence to judge whether it's been properly applied. So we fought the first case on behalf of Musqueam Nation, and the contest is about land with no present use. And if you hold land and are not using it, you are taxable, and it doubles the property tax on your property. And I had a client that was 6 years into the rezoning process and had spent $20 million on civic infrastructure on a development site. And the assessor said it's land with no use and it's taxable. And we said, no, no, no. Here's all the stuff we've been doing, and we are using this land, and we are therefore exempt. The assessor said you must use case law around the classification regulations for, you know, determining what class you're in. And we said, no, this is the School Act, not the Assessment Act. It's a different test. The end result is the board said it is counterproductive to tax land that is in development, when this purpose of this tax was introduced to create affordability And so taxing land in development adds to cost, and that affects the consumer, and you're doing nothing but driving up the cost of housing. So that's what that case was about. What was quite interesting, which I guess comes as no surprise to me, is BC Assessment appealed their decision. But for the first time in history, the Attorney General's Office and Her Majesty the Queen also filed an appeal on this case. So now we have a contest amongst three of us, to which the taxpayer has to defend, in my view, the consumer, the property owner, the homeowner, against this government who says they're trying to create affordability, but is doing nothing but taxing. So it's a very interesting case. The board says that we're right, and if their stated intent is affordability, this was wrongly imposed on development land.
Very, very interesting. It does seem a little counterintuitive that you're going to address affordability by increasing costs, but clearly that's what they tried to do there. How about in Saskatchewan, Travis? Do you have some unintended consequences out there as well?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of unintended consequences that came out of the system that was put in place for market value. One of the things that springs to mind that Paul was mentioning and Michelle touched on as well is the idea of the land value, the present use, and the market value. And at least in my experience, it really seems like the municipalities or the assessors, they're really interested in really pinpointing or reviewing the highest and best use for non-residential property. Small businesses, you know, areas of transition. But it appears, at least to me, a little bit inequitable when it comes to other areas of the valuation system. So if you have a particular like residential area that's somewhat older, and if the assessor has data that says, you know, all of the homes in this area were built in the 1920s, the land should be $3 million each. But they still apply the quote unquote value in use on their residential valuation side. Because obviously, as Paul pointed out, they don't want to be on the front page of the paper where they're, kicking somebody's aunt out of their home because she can't afford the taxes because the values went up. So, like,
it's probably not a good look. Yeah.
No, it's not. And I understand the market forces and what can cause that. The problem is where the assessor, inequitably approaches the problem, and the municipality doesn't do anything to mitigate the impact of the shift of the taxes for the people that are either living there or the small businesses that are trying to provide services. That's where I see the disconnect, is that when you call the assessor, it's very much, you can't talk to us about taxes, we're about the assessment, that's it, that's all. And I think that conversation needs to be a bit bigger. And I think the assessor and the municipality need to really put their heads together with, as I mentioned in the example before, with input from the market, with input from people that know what's going on, and collaborate to find some solution to these issues.
So clearly, valuation is the key, as you've all commented on. I guess, what advice would you have for those that are listening to the podcast, particularly on the commercial side? You know, what steps do you, you know, just before we finish today, you know, what steps do you recommend they take to help address that potential issue? Michelle, would you like to start, or go ahead, Paul?
Oh, I mean, I think I'd probably say what everybody else would say, which is you need to hire a professional. You know, everybody has an opinion of what their property is worth, whether it's your home or your commercial property. What you don't know is the legislation, the case law, the tools of the trade. We are not talking about what your property would sell for. It's not your equitable taxation value. And to not engage a professional in getting a review of your assessments, you're probably leaving money on the table.
Yeah, and I can speak to that quite closely. I actually used to work on the asset management side of things for a major international company, back in the day, and I was in charge of, you know, property taxes and making sure the assessments were in line. And it's a full-time job. So, you know, like there's just no way you can possibly know the nuances in each municipality, you know, each province, let alone each municipality within that province. It is so highly nuanced. And so yeah, having that look, that second look, even if you think it looks pretty good, that's close to maybe the appraisal value that I have. But appraisal value doesn't always equal assessment value. Like Paul said, there are certain dates, valuation dates, state and condition dates. You know, there's a lot of important information out there that you might not be considering when you're looking at that assessment value. So for Alberta, for example, you know, we're, and BC, I believe for that matter, you know, we're both heading into the pre-roll season, as one would call it. So it's an opportunity to kind of have that first look at values for our next year coming up before they're set in stone, as, you know, and mailed out to our clients and to owners. So that's the first opportunity to be looking at. So before it even really gets set, we do have an opportunity to see where the assessors are going to be coming out. And I remember Travis was telling that story of, you know, when he was looking at the condo bays and making an adjustment. This is our opportunity as well to be making some of those adjustments with the assessors. You know, if we're seeing a trend that assessors aren't seeing, you know, this is our opportunity to really bring it forward as well. So right now, as we head into the pre-roll season, that's a really important opportunity, specifically in Alberta and BC, to be looking at for 2022.
That sounds like really good advice. Travis, final word to you.
Thank you very much. I think if for those listening, if you have a property in or an interest in Saskatchewan, the first thing you'd want to do yourself is just, you know, look up your property on the assessor's website or request the information. And just double check the physical nature of the property. That's the easiest thing for the assessor to correct. If they've, for whatever reason, got your, you know, your building at, you know, 20,000 square feet, but it's really 15, the assessors are most often really happy to make that adjustment. That's an easy win for both sides on that one. If it's an issue beyond that, then certainly I'd recommend engaging a professional, because the 4-year system here, you have to keep in mind, the values right now in 2021 through 2024 reflect the property as though it hypothetically sold on January 1st, 2019, before COVID. But reflecting the physical nature and the legal nature of the property of January 1st in 2021. And then in 2022, it'll be January 1st, 2022. But still reflecting as though it sold January 1, 2019. So there's a lot of moving pieces on that, and it's pretty interesting, at least from my point of view.
Well, I certainly agree with that. I mean, great discussion today, and really good insight. I want to thank you, Travis, Michelle, and Paul. Thanks again for taking some time today to, you know, tell us a little bit more about property tax. I know I learned a lot, and I'm sure the listeners did too. So thank you again.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks.
All right. That concludes this episode of Ryan Talks Tax. For more information on Canadian property taxes, check out our website at ryan.com/Canada/news and insights. And please let us know what you think about the podcast. You can send your questions, comments, or suggestions to webinars@ryan.com. So long for now.